This is Living Lab. I'm Heather Goldstone. We tend to think of spring as planting time, at least I do. But kelp farmers in the Gulf of Maine are in the midst of their annual harvest right now. Growers and ocean researchers say kelp could be a huge win-win, improving the local environment, boosting other fisheries, and all while providing a sustainable, saleable product. Paul Dobbins is president of Ocean Approved, a Maine-based kelp distributor. Nicole Price is a senior research scientist and director of the Seafood Security Center for Venture Research at Bigelow Lab for Ocean Sciences in Booth Bay. They join us now from a studio at Maine Public Broadcasting in Portland. Welcome to Living Lab Radio.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you, Heather.
Nicole, first things first, kelp versus seaweed. I'm sure there's a difference. Is it a difference we need to pay a lot of attention to?
Well, kelp usually refers to the brown versions of the macroalgae seaweed, and they can be forest-forming, so they are much larger than many of your other species of macroalgae. So they are a unique form of macroalgae or seaweed.
Paul, in the past 10 years, we've gone from no kelp farms to over a dozen in the Northeast. What's been driving that increase?
I think what's been driving the increase is the demand for domestically produced seaweed is rapidly growing in the U.S., principally due to American consumers' increased awareness of the quality of waters where some of their seaweed may be coming from, some of our imported seaweed. And so we see this tremendous pent-up demand for a domestically produced product. And the wild harvest, which has been going on for centuries here along the New England coast, can only provide so much before we would start to perhaps do some damage to the ecosystem. And so consumers are looking for sustainably harvested, domestically produced alternatives to the imported seaweed from Asia.
And what is that demand for? Is it food? Is it fertilizer? What's it being used for?
Principally, it's being used for food products.
Nicole, you study the role that seaweeds play in carbon cycling and in moving carbon and nutrients around in the ocean. How did you get so that you were working with Paul?
Well, I came to Maine just about 3 years ago to start my work at Bigelow Labs, and I was immediately struck by how invested people living in the area are in the resources that they use, and also knew that I wanted to start to make these measurements on kelp farms, looking at how much carbon dioxide was getting absorbed. But I knew that I wasn't capable of starting a farm myself or installing enough biomass out there growing to really mimic what was possible. And I wanted to work with a farmer who was already in residence and up and running and had a lot of knowledge about how to install these farms and how to keep them going. And I started collaborating with someone from the Island Institute, Susie Arnold, who put me in touch with Paul as the first seaweed farmer in New England and actually in the U.S. And so it was a match made to be, I guess.
Paul, this is a relatively new line of work for you. What did you do before kelp farming?
I started out my ocean career as a scallop diver to help put myself through college almost 40 years ago, and had a varied career with a number of startups looking at different technologies, and then decided I wanted to get back to the ocean, and so looked at what would be available to me, and aquaculture seemed natural. It was a sustainable way to produce great food products, whether it be finfish, shellfish, or seaweed, and met a gentleman who had vision to start seaweed farms along the New England coast. Seaweed is farmed in 35 countries around the globe. It's the largest farmed crop by weight for marine aquaculture, and we weren't doing it here in the U.S., and so it seemed like a good fit for my desire to get back to the ocean, but put some of my experiences looking at and developing different technologies to use. And it, quite frankly, it seemed to be a lot of fun, and it has been.
You're listening to Living Lab Radio. My guests are Nicole Price of Bigelow Lab for Ocean Sciences and Paul Dobbins of Ocean Approved. We're talking about kelp farming, and we want to hear from you. What would it take for you to eat more seaweed? Send email to livinglabradio@capeandislands.org or find Living Lab Radio on Facebook and Twitter. Paul, you mentioned earlier that there is a wild harvest of kelp. So are the species that you are now growing in this aquaculture setting, are they native species?
Yes, they are. We developed the technology to cultivate four native species of kelp, and we developed different products based on the characteristics of those species. Each one has a unique flavor and texture, a unique nutrition profile. And so we try to use the best that we can find out there and match them up with what consumers find appealing.
So how does the growing actually work? I mean, you're planting something. How do you actually plant something in the ocean? What kind of maintenance does it require? And then how do you go back several months later and harvest it?
Sure. So it starts out in September. We go out and dive down and identify a good mom and pop, if you will, male and female kelp plants that are going to give the right characteristics that will create great yield for us on our farms. And that's how we've been doing it for the last 8 years, though, in working with Nicole at Bigelow and Susie over at Island Institute, we see that in the future, maybe we'll be able to do a better job of strain selection that will give us better yields on our farm. But for now, what we do is we look and see from our experience what looks like good, healthy kelp plants. Kelp spores like a mushroom, and they're zoospores. They actually move around, and we dry the kelp out, then rehydrate it quickly. The spores come out. They attach themselves to what looks like kite string. We grow them up in our nursery for about 30 days. We have tiny little, almost microscopic kelp plants, and then we transfer that kite string laden with little tiny kelp plants out onto long lines in the ocean, and that usually takes place sometime around the end of October, beginning of November. We start that process. That process ends about the 1st of January. Then we go out once a week. We check the lines, make sure everything's okay, there isn't any storm damage. And then in the spring, we go out and we start to harvest. The lines are about 7 feet below the surface. We raise them up. We cut the kelp off of the lines. We bring it to our processing facility and make food. So it's very similar to what a terrestrial farmer does. It's just that when terrestrial farmers are typically harvesting, we're seeding. And when they're seeding, we're harvesting.
And can other
– something?
Oh, go ahead, Nicole.
Sorry. Something that's truly amazing about this process is Paul mentioned when you put that kite string out on the farm, the kelp are microscopic. You can barely see them with your naked eye. But just in that six-month period, they get to be dozens and dozens of feet long. They're absolutely huge, and they grow so fast in such a short time period. They're pretty amazing.
What does that mean in terms of what they can do for the environment around them?
Well, they... In order to build that much biomass over such a short period, they have to take a lot of carbon out of the seawater that's the building blocks to put together all that cellular structure and all that biomass over that short period of time. And it turns out that the data we're able to gather is suggesting that they're absorbing a sufficient amount of carbon dioxide to really remediate the water quality in the immediate area, what we like to refer to as creating a halo of higher water quality immediately around the kelp farm.
So they're actually really reducing the amount of carbon dioxide that's been coming from the atmosphere. They're actually reducing the amount of that that's in the water there?
Yeah. They can reduce the carbon dioxide content of the seawater to a sufficient degree that we think it can actually have an impact on the ability of shellfish also growing in the immediate area to build their calcium carbonate structures and lay down those shells and get to market size faster. So we're really talking about a win-win-win situation where you have a product that's coming out of the seaweed farm or the kelp farm, an added value for the shellfish that's growing in that area, and an overall benefit to the environment.
Paul, I know some kelp growers are actually growing oysters, mussels, various shellfish right in with the kelp, kind of a co-culture situation. Are you doing anything like that?
Well, when we started the kelp farms, we were actually mussel farmers, and the first kelp farms were strung between our mussel rafts. And we did that for a number of years, and we've decided to move 100% to kelp for a variety of reasons. The shellfish would take in organic nitrogen. They give off inorganic nitrogen, and the kelp absorbs the inorganic nitrogen to grow. And so we find that the kelp grows very well in and around the shellfish farms.
I mean, speaking of nitrogen, a lot of coastal waters in New England actually have a nitrogen pollution issue, runoff from septic systems, from other fertilizers on land. Can these kelp farms help with that as well as the carbon dioxide issue?
They can. When the research we've done for the past 2 years has really focused on the carbon issue, but we are starting to collect data also on the amount of nitrogen that kelp is able to absorb. In either case, for either carbon or nitrogen, the kelp is not going to provide the overall solution to global widespread problems, but it can really act as a Band-Aid in a local area to remediate that water in that local region. And so if you have a localized runoff issue from fertilizers, from agriculture or from lawn care, you might be able to remediate that immediate area.
You know, Heather, one of the things that we did a couple of years ago is we actually measured how much nitrogen was sequestered in our harvest and extracted from the water. And it came out that it was equivalent of 32 50-pound bags of your basic lawn fertilizer is what came out of the water from one of our farms, which our farms are not very big. This was a 3-acre farm, and so that was quite an eye-opener for us being laypeople. We had no idea that may have been taking place.
It's part of the reason that kelp can also be used as a natural organic fertilizer. It just naturally concentrates those limiting nutrients, the nitrogen and phosphorus, that can be so depleted in our agricultural systems.
Paul, I understand 3 acres in terms of a terrestrial farm wouldn't be a very big farm, but I'm wondering, is a kelp farm like this a navigational hazard? Does it limit what other activities might be able to happen in those waters?
Well, when we started, that was a pretty big concern, not only for us because we navigate the waters, but for all of the other commercial fishermen out there and for the recreational boaters. And through our research, we found that kelp in our area where we farm grows best at 7 feet below the surface. And where we're tucked up next to the islands, all of the boats that operate in that area, there are only two that we're aware of that have a greater depth than 5 feet. And those sailboats wouldn't be in where we operate. So over the course of 8 years, we've never had an incident where anyone's tangled up in any of the kelp. And in fact, one of our kelp farms is about a quarter mile away from a small yacht club. And we see them passing over the farm all the time in the late spring. But because of our seasonality, after we harvest, our farms literally get rolled up. The long lines get rolled up onto reels and are taken out of the water. And during the summer months, when people are most active on the water in the Gulf of Maine, we don't have any infrastructure in the water.
Nicole, I have to say, a lot of this sounds too good to be true. Are there any potential negative environmental impacts of kelp farming?
There's still actually a lot of unknowns about how positive it can be even. So this is just our second year of work, and we're trying to get a handle on how consistent the halo is from one season to another season and really what the size of the halo is. We have a guesstimate, but we actually have technicians out on Paul's farm today making measurements using an underway PCO2 system to map what the carbon dioxide content is of the seawater at various distances around the farm. So there's still a lot of unknowns. And some of the negatives, you know, there aren't a lot that come to mind other than biosecurity issues. Whenever you're farming something in an open marine environment like that, you want to make sure you're not accidentally introducing non-native species or diseases on a native population that can be spread around. And then you also might have concerns about genetic mixing with the environment. But as Paul said, the source tissue that people use to start these seaweed farms, especially in Maine, comes from a local population. And so it's guaranteed then to not only be native, but to also be of the same genetic structure that's already in the environment. So there are steps being taken to circumvent some of those negative issues that could arise already.
Paul, Nicole invited me to a kelp luncheon last spring, and I have to say the food was delicious. There were kelp chips, kind of like kale chips. There was seaweed salad. There were kelp scones, all sorts of stuff. How would someone who might be interested in trying kelp products or incorporating more kelp into their diet, how would you actually get your hands on some Maine-grown kelp?
Well, in Ocean Approves' case, we sell to institutions and large organizations because we're a small company. So doing retail packaging at our scale right now is cost prohibitive. So if you were to attend one of the universities in New England or actually as far southwest as Texas, you would probably have our products served in the dining hall. And so as a retail consumer, it would be difficult to get your hands on some of the ocean-approved kelp. However, Maine Coast Sea Vegetables does a great job. They have a line of dried products that are sold in retail establishments throughout New England. And there are some other Maine-based companies, some smaller ones, and sometimes you can find their products in a retail space. What that points to is the great opportunity I think we have for seaweed aquaculture here in the Gulf of Maine in New England, in that almost all of the seaweed that's consumed in the U.S. is imported from Asia. And so I think there's a great opportunity for us to develop opportunities for employment along the coast by bringing this technology and this form of aquaculture into New England, to develop great food products that consumers in the U.S. would prefer over imported products, and at the same time be doing something that is at best restorative to the environment and at worst is sustainable in its practices of farming, so that we can develop these great food products without having to worry about depleting the wild resource.
Paul, what's your favorite kelp recipe?
My favorite kelp recipe is a soup that my wife makes that has kelp, carrots, ginger, a little bit of garlic, and that's it. It's real simple. It's fast for us to make, and it really has a nice fresh flavor to it, and is highly nutritious.
Nicole, how about you?
I like the kelp cubes that are kind of already ground up, and you can put them into a smoothie. They're just really easy to get your hands on and to work with. You can also put them into a pesto, so you can add nutritional value and somewhat hide the flavor if it's something that you don't want to taste.
That's Nicole Price of Bigelow Lab for Ocean Sciences and Paul Dobbins of Ocean Approved. Thanks so much to both of you, and here's to a good harvest this spring.
Thank you, Heather.
Thanks.
Thanks also to John Keimel at Maine Public Broadcasting Network for his production assistance with that conversation. I'm Heather Goldstone. We asked how you take your kelp, and you answered. Heather from Maine says she has a dried applewood smoked recipe. Trudy from Boston says she sautés our arame seedweed with green beans, carrots, and onions to make some yummy stuff. And Paula from Rhode Island tells us she enjoyed seaweed ball appetizers and cheese and dulce scones when she was in Ireland. Adriana from Belchertown, Massachusetts, shared some family history. She says her relatives in Nova Scotia used to gather dulce in the afternoon or at low tide for an evening meal. And perhaps topping the list, Sung Bin of East Falmouth, Massachusetts, sent us a full recipe for a beef and seaweed soup that I personally am dying to try. Of course, not everybody is so enthusiastic. Kat from Chatham says sea lettuce is okay, but kelp tastes like rubber. And Aaron of Groton, Massachusetts says this all just reminds her of SpongeBob SquarePants. Thanks for talking back to us. Living Lab continues with a look at the future of septic systems after a short break.